Welcome to Impacting Care.
Hello and welcome. I'm Natalia Anderson. Over the past 2 years on this show, we have talked to people with haemophilia, healthcare professionals, members of patient organisations or expert volunteers, learning how they are impacting care in their country or region. In the series, we have heard from those who are raising awareness, improving the diagnosis and care for people with haemophilia, and advocating with a united voice to be able to live full lives. This podcast is presented by Novo Nordisk Haemophilia Foundation, a non-profit organisation dedicated to improving access to care for people with haemophilia and allied disorders in low and middle-income countries. Today, I am honoured to welcome Denise Brendgaard, General Manager at the Foundation. Welcome to the show, Denise.
Thank you. Hi, Natalia. Thanks for having me.
Denise, could you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself and how long you have been working with the NNHF?
I started nearly 15 years ago, at the time as a student intern, and been in this position now for the last 6 years.
Denise, what has been your greatest motivation working for the Foundation?
Yes, so maybe to answer that, a little bit about my personal story. So I am Swiss-Peruvian from a nationality, and I grew up between different countries, back and forth between low and middle-income countries and high-income countries. And every time moving to a new country, I was lucky to always have felt part of each of those societies I had the opportunity to live in, learning the local languages, the culture. And this led me to have a good understanding of the socioeconomic and cultural differences across the world, also the inequities, the challenges and opportunities, not only from, you know, what you can read in books or watch on TV, but really from living it myself. So it also gave me the opportunity to see what unites us all as human beings. We all wish to be healthy and have a healthy family, to thrive and to fulfill our dreams. So really working at the Novo Nordisk Haemophilia Foundation, I can support fulfilling the dreams of many people with bleeding disorders to access diagnosis, care and treatment, not only in some of the countries that I had the opportunity to live in and where I'm from, but really across the world. And I have a short personal anecdote from my early days at the NNHF that has inspired me both for my work and also personally. So many, many years ago, I had the opportunity to participate in the first youth leadership camp organized by the patient organization of the Dominican Republic, where I facilitated some workshops for the youth. And after some days of working tirelessly day and night on defining the next projects of the patient organization in small groups, the young people, mainly they were men, because they were people with bleeding disorders, they were allowed to go out to the nearby club on the last evening. And all of us from the project team accompanied them. And this is where I had this proud moment, really watching them dancing. So despite the joint arthropathy that they had in their knees or ankles, they were just dancing all the time. Differently to some of the men who were also there, not having haemophilia, and they were just sitting around and watching. These people with haemophilia, they were dancing all night. And I often think back to that evening, and this example serves me as an inspiration to do what you like, despite any limitations you may have. And for me to continue impacting care for people with bleeding disorders, together with our partners, really making their dreams of a healthy and fulfilling life come true.
The rate of change across the world seems to increase all the time in culture, society, and technology. Has the organization also changed much over the years?
Certainly, the organization has changed a lot. I think change is what happens all the time in our lives, and of course also for us as an organization. And I think what is important to mention is that our partners are really the ones seeing the opportunities for change. And they are also the ones creating the change. And that is what contributes to the change, or you can call it development, of our organization and also of our offering, so that we always stay with the finger on the pulse of what is needed adapting the ways that we can contribute to society.
Can you share some examples?
So personally, if you ask me for a specific number of, for example, how many projects we're running in a given year, let's say in 2014, I wouldn't remember. I would have to look that up. But if you ask me who I was working with, I would still remember. And I think this is the first level. It's really the people. The most fulfilling change for me is when I see people blossom. For example, when a young doctor who just graduated has the desire and also the vision to change hemophilia care, but maybe doesn't have all the tools, be it she doesn't have the team around her, the equipment in the lab, the management skills to turn things around. And I love to be in that moment of seeing the potential in people and knowing that we can offer them the tools. And then I'm usually positively surprised about what people do with that little input that we can provide. They really make wonders happen. This can be, for example, creating a multidisciplinary care team from scratch with the highest quality of skilled people, which really leads to happy and healthy patients who thrive in their lives.
What about the changes for your people at the NNHF?
In order for us as an organization to offer the best tools in the right way and in the right moment, we need to know and understand our partners very well. And that's why we 6 years ago decided to have a change and have our program managers located across the world, closer to our partners. So that's let's say we're based on the changes that our partners do, then we also learn and have adapted. So with the changes created by our partners, which fuel the changes in our team, this is also where our council, which is our board, has changed over time. So today we have council members representing each of the regions of the world we operate in, and they have all been our former project partners leading projects locally on the ground, meaning that they bring invaluable knowledge from their own experiences and a wealth of expertise that guides our development as an organization. And if we look back to 2005, when we were founded by Novo Nordisk, we started with just a handful of countries where we supported projects. And until today, we have now supported 300 programs in almost 90 countries, changing the lives of so many people, people with bleeding disorders, family members, healthcare professionals, and also the health authorities.
I understand that you've also witnessed important changes in access to haemophilia care in some countries where the NNHF has been supporting projects.
Yes, exactly. So I think the case briefly mentioned before in Monterrey, Mexico. This is the example of a recently graduated doctor who, together with her team, really turned around haemophilia care in a short period of time. And this was the work of Dr. Laura Villarreal from Monterrey. But staying in Latin America, where I actually initially started working when I joined the Novo Nordisk Hemophilia Foundation, I would like to also mention the example of Panama, where I've met the genuinely warmest people with the really biggest hearts, and at the same time, a very clear vision, working both in the patient organization, this is with Alisa and Luis, and also in the Hemophilia Treatment Center, with a visionary leader, who is Dr. Bélgica Moreno. She has now retired from her job, but working together with the nurse Luz Villalaz, who is still in the team, and the lab personnel around Guadalupe Vivero. And the human capital that you have in a very small space, which is the Hemophilia Center, is really unbelievable. They first ensured to create a strong referral center in Panama City, and after that, in a very meticulous way, both based on their methodology, but also how they socially involved all the people around, they established 6 clinics across the country. And what this has led to is a reduction of travel time to access care by up to 76%. And I think one thing is that they actually achieved this. But the other part is also how they did it, always ensuring a close link between the healthcare professionals and the families of the children with bleeding disorders, ensuring that the healthcare professionals really understand the families and vice versa, so that there is a common ground developed. I was impressed at the time, and I'm still impressed by the way they do it. And now, actually, the next step is that they are tackling adult care, which I can't see. I can't wait to really see developing, so that continuity of care can be guaranteed for the children who then transition into adulthood.
And what about Africa? Do you have any examples from that region?
I believe that this is where there is, at the same time, the biggest need and also the greatest potential. And I'm inspired again by the visionary thinking, the can-do attitude, the candor and the passion of our partners there. And here I must highlight the leadership of Dr. Kibechi Kuku from Kenya, who, by the way, was the first guest of our podcast series. So I invite everyone to listen to that podcast with Dr. Kibet. He's really a catalyst of change, not only in his home country, but also across the region. And for me, every conversation that I have with Dr. Kibet offers me new learnings, insights, ideas, and I admire his ability to make things happen through mobilizing and inspiring other people, apart from his very high ethical standards. And this is where 10 years ago in Kenya, there were only 2 centers offering hemophilia care. And today there are 14 spread across the country. And this, of course, saves people with hemophilia time and money to access care. And it has increased the diagnosis rate by 14% just in the last 3 years. Dr. Kibet was also the one identifying the opportunity to have a joint approach to hemophilia and sickle cell disease, emphasizing on the similarities he as a doctor sees, and how advocating with a united voice and training healthcare professionals on both diseases can lead to an acceleration of really including these two diseases in the national health programs. So in many ways, I'm always impressed and inspired by our partners, and they are the ones showing us the way so that we can also adapt the way we work.
You're listening to Impacting Care from the Novo Nordisk Hemophilia Foundation. If you're enjoying this episode, please make sure to subscribe to this podcast in your podcast player. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Denise, how do you manage partner feedback to know if the foundation is achieving its goals?
Yeah, so we're in the lucky situation to receive constant feedback from our partners. We also offer them feedback, so I think it's a give and take, because we are in this regular direct dialogue with them. Feedback is really a gift, and therefore hearing from our partners also anonymously is important to ensure we capture their full and honest opinions, because we always seek to improve the way we work and optimize our processes and our offerings. So we ran the first grantee perception report prepared by the Center for Effective Philanthropy last year with our partners. And we were really amazed by the high response rate. It was 82%. So 82% of our partners participated in the survey. And I would like to highlight some of the key results. First of all, that the partners hold extremely positive perceptions of the Novo Nordisk Hemophilia Foundation. This, of course, makes us proud. And they highly value the transparency, where actually our foundation scored above all other more than 350 foundations that are part of the data set that we are compared to. And what they also value is the openness to ideas and the enriching process. I'm happy they say this because it's also what we value in our interactions with them.
Okay, so apart from being extremely proud about the results, why do you believe it's important to receive a grantee perception report?
Well, it's very important to receive a grantee perception report to get the feedback from our partners, to have the finger on the pulse. I mean, really know what they think, what they believe we can do better, what we should do more of, understanding the needs, the challenges, the opportunities, and to adapt our offering.
What are the areas of improvement that you have identified, and where will you focus in the upcoming years?
Our partners want us to be closer to them, also now post-pandemic. Of course, we had some years where we were not able to travel and visit our partners. But now, after the COVID-19 pandemic, we are, of course, very careful with the impact we leave on the environment and also the funds we spend on traveling. So we don't travel a lot, but we need to be close to our partners so that we can continue to understand their needs and the ever-changing environment around them and us. And the second part is that they have asked us also to streamline our reporting processes, which we are doing. And we are also supporting our partners to outsource some of the administrative work that was on their shoulders.
In some of the past episodes of Impacting Care, we've heard from members of patient organisations about the important role of such a supportive group, but also about the importance of succession planning. How do you usually identify what needs to be improved and how to achieve that specific objective?
Succession planning is, of course, key. I love it when I see examples of people that already, you know, young doctors, for example, and they are already bringing an even younger doctor on board. This is not maybe natural for everyone. I think it comes natural to us to think of succession planning, for example, in our families, right? We give things, pass on things to our kids, skills, knowledge, and so on. And in the patient organizations, this is where we often inspire maybe the patient organizations to think more of succession planning. So all the learnings and everything that is done by the current group or the current head of the patient organization can then be passed on to the next generation. I mean, patient organizations are really crucial so that care can be advanced, and they need to build up the relationships with a variety of stakeholders, be it healthcare professionals, health authorities, and so on. So it's quite a lot that needs to be passed on to the next generation. So of course, it also takes time. So therefore, the earlier, the better you start thinking and planning for succession.
I'd like to ask you about partnerships with other foundations. Over the past couple of years, you have sealed important partnerships with other international organisations, such as the Novo Nordisk Foundation, the Foundation Pierre Faber, and the International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis, the ISTH. What do these partnerships bring to the NNHF?
Yeah, so we are a small organisation and we can't solve all the issues alone. Also, other organisations bring a different network, different experience, expertise, and all of that is enriching and opens doors to our partners and us. So for example, more than 10 years ago, we started sponsoring the International External Quality Assurance Scheme, which is in short IEQAS, of the World Federation of Hemophilia. So partnering with the WFH, we can ensure to have quality of diagnosis in the labs enrolled in this program. Every year, we can enroll 5 labs established through the NNHF projects. And this way, we can track how the labs are performing also after our projects end and offering them additional support in case needed. In Kenya and Tanzania, we've had the opportunity to co-fund a project with the Novo Nordisk Foundation, which has accelerated care in both countries, decreasing by 18 hours the journey to access care, for example, in Tanzania. And this we wouldn't have been able to support this fast on our own. And with Fondation Pierre Fabre, we have joined forces in some French-speaking African countries where their foundation supports the development of sickle cell care and we support the hemophilia side. So this is when I say that 1 + 1 = 3, because our local partners can work more effectively and efficiently with our joint support, benefiting in the end more people and advocating in a united way. And then with the International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis, short ISTH, this is where they have been supporting the creation of regional training centers for some years, and their support focused on capacity building. But it did not offer the center's equipment, for example, for the lab and for physiotherapy. So this is where one of our expert volunteers, Dr. Tintin Yi from the UK, who is actively supporting Myanmar, she actually identified a gap that we could close if we joined forces with ISTH. And this finally materialized. And last year, in 2022, this was the year that Ramathibodi Hospital in Bangkok, in Thailand, became the first center to receive equipment through our partnership with ISTH.
Indeed, in one of the past episodes of Impacting Care, we've heard from Professor Saliou Diop in Senegal how people with hemophilia can benefit from integrated management of blood disorder care. Do you see this approach being considered in other countries where the NNHF supports projects?
Certainly, in many places of the world, as our projects are based on the needs identified by the people in the different countries, whenever our partners see opportunities, they share those openly with us. And this is how new projects, pilot projects, really arise. And this is also how the first project benefiting the hemophilia and the sickle cell community started in Kenya in 2018.
So from what you've said so far, is it fair to say that the NNHF is encouraging and enabling local and regional partnerships?
Absolutely. We started supporting these partnerships locally because the idea came from our partners. And then we actually translated that approach to our own organization on a global level, which are the partnerships I mentioned before with the Novo Nordisk Foundation, ISTH, Pierre-Fabre Foundation, and the WFH. And these partnerships, both locally and globally, they bring us so many new learnings, new perspectives, so that we can offer more guidance to our partners locally. And what we learn in one country is shared in other countries across the world. So it's somehow, I say it, a bit of a symbiosis, so a mutual development and growth between us and our partners, both locally and globally.
We're almost out of time, Denise. Let me ask you finally, what is your vision for the future of the NNHF and haemophilia care? Or where do you see the NNHF in 2025?
So by 2025, we wish to intensify the impact we create in haemophilia and allied disorders, having a strengthened global network, expanding our funding for our partners, and fostering advocacy to continue working towards reaching our vision that all people with hemophilia or allied disorders access care and treatment wherever they live. And 2025 is just around the corner, so please stay tuned to celebrate our 20th anniversary, celebrating the impact of our partners around the world.
Denise, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
So that is the end of today's episode. Please make sure to subscribe to this podcast. If you want to start or get involved in a project where you live or find out more information, please visit the Novo Nordisk Haemophilia Foundation website at www.nnhf.org. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is intended for informational, educational, and inspirational purposes only. Please speak with a healthcare professional before making any decisions related to your health. The interviews in this series are with project partners, people with bleeding disorders, and volunteers who are impacting care with the Novo Nordisk Haemophilia Foundation. Our guests haven't received compensation, and the views expressed are those of the people interviewed.